All right, we are here on November 9th, 2006. I'm speaking with Jim Smith,
yeah.
And he's going to tell me about his experiences as a POW of the Germans. We are here in J.J. Morgan's on Mackenzie Avenue and Sea Health Road.
Well, now, the reason I typed it all
Shelburne
out...
Shelburne and Mackenzie.
Shelburne and Mackenzie, yes.
The reason I typed it all out, it's all in there.
Mm-hmm.
And
but
me ad-libbing it to you across the table here.
But this is oral history, Jim.
Yes.
So he wants you to tell your story.
Yeah.
He'll ask you questions and you'll tell your story.
Oh, he asked the questions, okay.
Yeah. Well, first, I wouldn't mind if you just briefly described your experiences in the war before you were captured, such as your bombing runs. Just a very brief general view of what you did.
Well, I was in Bomber Command in England,
mm-hmm.
in the Canadians Group 6 Group. All Canadians, although there were the Australian or somebody else in it, but basically it's a Canadian group, bomber group.
Okay, and you ran how many trips?
I did four trips to the Ruhr before I got shot down in Hamburg, which is five, which is the fifth trip.
So you were captured in Hamburg, you were shot down. How did that occur?
Well, that's something else again. We hadn't dropped the bombs yet.
Mm-hmm.
We were coming in on the target, and a German night fighter got us and shot us up. They hadn't dropped our bomb yet. A big, I don't know how many we had on that night, but the whole thing was full. And the next thing I knew, the pilot was obviously wounded with the shooting, and the other two up front were also wounded. And myself, who's in the middle of the airplane, was ready, prepared to go out the back hatch. And, of course, it never got there. It was on fire.
Coffee?
Yeah. We were on fire. And it blew up. The next thing I knew, and it's all in that thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing I knew... I was in the air, and I hadn't my chute on before. Good thing, or I wouldn't have been here talking to you. Okay? So here I was coming down. I could see the ground, and I reached here for the parachute and the straps that hold it down, and so it doesn't get in your way. It wasn't here, and I had to comfort and mind reach up there, and there it was. I pulled the thing and hit the ground.
Were you injured at all?
Oh, I didn't have any shoelaces. I could hardly walk, but I didn't break anything. It's amazing. Everybody else I tell this story says, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of things are amazing in the Air Force Bomber Command. Anyway, that's the way it was. And I was, I saw some German Air Force people running towards me. So I got up and I got out of there. And I hid that night in a hedgerow. And the next morning I was picked up by two civilians who are obligated by the German system all the civilians that could walk would be searched for aircrew somewhere in the path to where the bombers come in and bombers come out.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So you handed over, and this was in Hamburg.
Yeah.
Okay. How were you treated right off the bat? As soon as
I wasn't mistreated, but the thing was really that. They put on that they're going to kill you right away because you've done all the damage that you had. And you just have to go through that. Of course, we had been told about that as from experience of other people that were prisoners of war before. So they would feed back into England and on the bomber on your bomber squadron. You knew all this. Okay? So you just had to play the game that they were playing. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
So other than that, I got hit once, but that's expected.
What about the one that offered you half his dinner?
Pardon?
What about the man that offered you half his dinner?
Oh, yeah. Well, after the first, I was taken to the town police department, and I was in there having interrogated and that sort of thing. And my dad asked me to carry his Bible, not that I was a Bible type, but he carried it through the Boer War and the First World War. So he said, "Take this for luck." Which, of course, it seemed to be working. Anyway, so then, after they had finished talking to me, it was a police chief and a guy in civilian clothes, which I'm sure was Gestapo, but he wasn't admitted, and I didn't ask him. So after that, they had called in a German Luftwaffe captain, who was in charge of the radar system there, where I was shot down. So he took me up, I walked back to him about a mile to his place where he was, and then he offered me coffee, and he offered me some of his dinner, you know, that sort of thing. Spoke perfect English, which a lot of Germans do. And so I had quite a chat with him. And he said to me, he said, "You know," he says, "you're going to be fighting with us Germans," he says, "before the war, because the Russians are, you're going to turn around and fight them." Yeah. And, of course, we say no. He said, "Oh, yes." He said, so he was pretty intelligent. There's a lot of Germans speak English. You know. Mm-hmm. So that was that, him. And then I was taken to the jail the next day, and was there for about, I guess, about 3 weeks, I guess, before, no, pardon me, that's not right. I was put on the train with four other guys, Canadians,
okay.
one English and four Canadians, all from three different bombers that were shot down. That's the only survivors.
Were you the only member of your crew to survive?
Yep.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Well, it blew up. Plus the fact that it was shot up. And I'd missed me somehow. Who knows? One of the games of war, you know. And so then I was taken to Frankfurt, which is Dulag Luft was the name of that place. All the aircrew POWs, captured aircrew, were taken there for interrogation. Okay?
Yeah.
So I was in there about 3 weeks before I got out of there, because they ranted and raved, and they're going to do this to you, I'm going to do that to you, but you just have to... You'd been briefed back in the squadron in a way that all these things happen, from messages they get back from the POWs to England. So anyway, it's all in that thing. I'm sort of... not doing it as well as my writing.
Oh, well, this is actually excellent. This is incredible. Okay. This is great stuff that I'm hearing.
What about when you walked through the woods? You thought you were going to be dead? They were going to shoot you when you walked through the woods?
Oh,
you
yeah.
Came to the truck or whatever?
Yes. I was walking through the woods, and I didn't know, and I had this German ground crew corporal with a gun out, quite afraid on my back, and I figured, well, maybe this was it. So you have to assume all these things. But anyway, we eventually came out on the highway, and there was four other guys in blue. And they were all from different airplanes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? So we got to know them, and got to know them further on. We were in the interrogation center in Frankfurt, and 3 weeks of trying to get more out of you. Because they didn't believe you, and they'd rant and rave, and they never struck me. I didn't know. They didn't strike me, but they were just about doing all that.
But when you got to that truck, wasn't there some of your dead bodies in it?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, the dead.
Sorry, I just...
Oh, that's actually great help.
Yeah. The dead... It was a truck full of dead bodies. And there were some that weren't in the truck yet. And so they loaded the truck, and we rode all afternoon. The two guys couldn't see out of their eyes, so they rode with the German staff car. And I and another guy, while we're banged up here and there, we were included. So we rode all afternoon in this body of truck, maybe 30 other Air Force dead bodies, all in there. So when we got to the place we were going, the captain there said again, "Unload the bodies." I said, "I'm not unloading the bodies." Well, he says, "The two of you, and we're not going to do it." And then he said, "Well, they were your comrades, weren't they?" And I said, "Yes, they were." "Well," he says, "well." So I said, "No point arguing." I guessed to myself, so I unloaded the bodies. Demko, he's a guy from Edmonton. Not my crew, but she was in another one of the crew. So we unloaded all the bodies. They had them all tagged, this crew and that crew, and they knew exactly where they were. The Germans are very efficient people.
But your crew was amongst those bodies.
Oh, yeah. Just what's left of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I picked them up, too.
You doing okay?
Oh, are you?
I'm going to go. No, it's okay. It's
it was helter-skelter. They were bound to determine they were going to get as much information out of you as they could, and you were determined they weren't going to get any. So that went on all the time. So I spent 3 weeks in that guy's jail, too, and interrogated every day, that sort of thing. But you just had to play it by ear. You know? Sometimes you tell them a little thing, and sometimes you wouldn't. That sort of thing. So after about 3 weeks in this Frankfurt, we were taken by freight train to Barth, which is on the north coast. And we spent there, that's from, say, July to December. And then we moved all the way into East Prussia.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the name of the camp in East Prussia?
It was Stella Glove 6.
Okay.
It was a brand new one. And that, so let's see now, where am I at?
Well, if we can just go back to when you first entered into the first prisoner of war camp after your interrogation.
Yeah.
Can you just give me a brief sense of how the camp was set up? How the chain of how who gave the orders and who received them?
Well, it was all Luftwaffe. Luftwaffe control, mm-hmm. Ground crew. They weren't they weren't army. They were Luftwaffe, and run by a Luftwaffe captain as well. We weren't. The meals were terrible. There weren't much meals. In fact, in my 2 years of being a prisoner of war, I went down from 181 pounds to, what did I say? 115 pounds when I got back in. And they had 5 meals a day. Couldn't go and leave. To visit anybody or do anything until about 2 or 3 weeks later, which you get built up some of your strength. It's got all good sense, but
in that first Luftwaffe camp, was that when you had 4 school buddies? Imagine.
Yeah.
From
where he went to high school.
Yeah.
Really?
In high school in Saskatoon, there was four, or five of us all together. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to hear their stories and what have you, as well as my own. None of them were any good. But you're alive.
I'd just like to go back to the question of command. When this German captain, would he give commands through a high-ranking Allied officer? captured who?
There are no officers in our camp. We're all NCO.
You were all NCO. Okay.
Yeah. If you were an officer, you were all a static level 3.
Okay.
Which, in that case, there were two group captain aircrew guys, prisoners of war, and they ran the camp because of the old system of I'm the senior guy, so I'm going to tell you what to do. Well, in our case, we didn't do that. We did the old election process, and the guy that we had was a fellow by the name of a Scottish chap by the name of Dixie Deans, D-E-A-N-S.
D-E-A-N-S.
And he spoke fluent German and understood the German psyche because he was a salesman in Germany before the war from Scotland, eh?
Yeah.
So he knew. And he couldn't pull it. I saw him get twice. He got, for telling them which way was up, he got socked on the jaw and knocked down. That didn't matter. And when the army, towards the end of the war, when the paratroopers came in through Belgium, what have you, and they started, and we were captured by that time. I jumped a whole year. But they said, well, the senior fellow here was a flight sergeant, so we're warrant officer ones in the paratroopers, so we're running the camp now. We told them to get lost. So we told them that, and they were insistent on it, you know. So it's like the group captains that were in the prisoner of war camp. There might have been some people there that could run the camp a lot better than them, but they wouldn't do that. Okay? Typical military nonsense. Anyway.
So when they came in, you had to cede control over to them?
Pardon?
When they came in, you had to cede control over. They took it.
No, we didn't.
You didn't?
No,
so
we told
what
them
happened
to get
then?
Lost.
So they were just relegated to a different area and you...
No, they were in the camp, but they suddenly realized that what they might have been as last month before they were captured were the warrant officer ones in the military, and we were flight sergeants, about the highest rank, the odd warrant officer, but very few. And we went through the democratic system of electing who we figured it would be best to run the camp. Right? And this Dixie Deems, he got two commendations from the British government after the war. Right? He was good. He was good, hard-nosed, and they didn't, as far as the Germans were concerned. And he was, no matter which camp we were in, which we moved to three camps, I guess, the time was finished, towards the end. But he was always the camp leader, except with the paratroopers wanted to take it over.
So would it have been him who decided who got specific positions? Like, how was that? Did the Germans appoint you people into different positions, or was that internally appointed, say, as
no,
chef?
No, the Germans insisted that we have a representative to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this Dixie Deans was, eh?
Mm-hmm.
So. And he had a couple of assistants, that sort of thing.
Were they also appointed by you guys?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We didn't... we were democratic.
Was there any sort of ceremony involved in this? Was there any saluting, or was it all equality and...
How do you mean?
Well, did you have to salute, say, Dixie D or anything like that, or was it just all equal?
Salute who?
Dixie D. Or?
Oh no!
I'm
no.
trying to understand if
we had the warrant officers, and we had a couple of them were actually officers, but they didn't want to. The Germans, for whatever reason, they missed them, and they were just the rest of us, like the rest of us.
But there was no saluting involved, except
no,
among yourselves,
no,
just the Germans.
No, no.
All right, that's excellent. How were the Germans? This is on a new track now. In terms of propaganda, did the Germans at all try and influence you?
Oh, sure, all the time. We were going to win the war. That's normal. We just tell them you're full of, you know, and you're not going to win, so, you know, and it turned out that's true.
Well, also, they had radio contact with, the BBC and everything, didn't you, Jim?
We had BBC News every day from London, England.
You had a hidden recorder somewhere?
Well, there was a group of people that had a piece of the radio, and we got the radio and that sort of thing from the Germans because they were after cigarettes, and which they couldn't get, mm-hmm. and cigarettes and
chocolates.
And you would get these in your
in the Red Cross parcels when they came. They weren't always coming. Because we were shooting up the railroads, and they weren't interested in taking POW camps.
But you said when the Germans did bring in any propaganda, you told them just to go to hell. Was there any special privileges given to those who appeared to? How do I say this?
You mean our guys, you mean?
Yeah, did you, if any of you went over to their side, say, to help them, was there any special privileges given them?
No, but I don't know of anybody that did.
Okay.
They would be recorded on the post-war, mm-hmm. But they were Germans, helping the Germans.
Okay.
I don't know what they'd get, but there weren't many in our camp to do that. But...
tell them what else you did with your at Christmas with your parcels.
Oh yeah, and the only we had about maybe 30 or so Russian prisoners. They were doing cleaning the camps and that sort of thing. So we asked the German commandant at that time, was a major, if we could collect food, the food parcels we got. And send it to the Russians. I said, sure, go ahead.
Because they had nothing.
They had no Red Cross packages.
No. Go ahead, nothing.
How were they treated in comparison to you, the Russians?
Oh, I get beat up, I think, regularly. But they had no... all they do were workers.
They were in tents, not huts.
Yeah.
Right, Jim?
Pardon?
They were in tents, not huts.
Yeah, they didn't have any huts. They were in tents. Up in Lithuania... during the winter, not warm. But anyway, so about 3 months after we collected all this food from all the POW camp, people in the camp, we got a note back and says, "Armors and Arms, Knights of the Sky." If any more biscuits. And, of course, we got some more. Most of the German officers are like this guy. He was on leave from the Eastern Front. So he was wounded and that type of guy. But he was a good guy, and he spoke English as well. So we always had... We respected him, because he had a job to do. But it was a dull life.
Oh, I can imagine.
Oh.
Would you mind just describing your daily, your daily routine? You wake up and...
Well, there was a roll call in the morning about 7:30, run by the Germans to see who was who and what was what. We tried to screw it all up, the count, you know, that sort of thing, every time we could. And they used to get mad at us, and then they'd dream up a new system that they're going to... we were always ahead of them. They were... I don't know how we did it all the time, but the Germans...
Coffee?
No. Yes, please.
Yep. Okay.
Can I have a glass of water, please?
They, thank you. They were, they were kind of... The German officers and NCOs were smart, just like we were. But they were had the people counting were privates, you know. Because they didn't know what we were doing, and we were changing positions all the time and that sort of stuff. They didn't know what to do with that. It was great. Great fun. Well, that's some of our fun. And I thought it was bored as hell.
So then what did
after roll call, what would happen? After roll call, what would happen?
Well, after roll call, they would have a new system of, say, funneling us all through a hut. No matter how many, there's 20 or 30 huts, barracks, and they'd funnel us all the way through there. It took all day. Purposely by us, right? Just to keep them on their toes. Well, we had to dream up some humor.
One thing I've heard about in my readings is something called schools inside huts, where you would band together with, say, three or four other guys and share all the provisions, all packages you got from home. All food would be shared out between you. Is this something you experienced?
No.
No?
No. You formed a two to three man thing, because that's the way your pot of soup would come up. And if you get it any more than that, who knows would get the soup. Mm-hmm. But it's all in there. My thing about telling them how to... The problem with dishing out the food was real trouble, because the soup came in a barrel with a big stick, and you stirred it. But there was always the heavy stuff of the soup going to the bottom. Mm-hmm. And of course, when the people at the top of the soup just got sort of liquid soup, eh? No, not that there was that good a body of the soup anyway. But they would eventually say, okay, we had to number the tables in each barrack room, and they would rotate the tables for the soup.
Okay.
Right? So you'd get your chance, but every 7 days you'd get the bottom of the barrel. You had to do that. Otherwise, it wasn't very... There wasn't any humor around, because we're all starving. Right? So there wasn't anybody there that wasn't losing weight. No way. So, what else?
Well, I'm just wondering... when you were all non-NCOs, you weren't commissioned officers. I thought all privates had to work.
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
Anybody below the rank of corporal had to work.
Okay.
Because there were no air crew below the rank.
Oh, okay.
Rank of sergeant.
As the war progressed, how did... treatment change? Were the officers more rough? Was food more scarce?
No, because as the war was proceeding, we were winning. Mm-hmm. And our people that were shooting up trains didn't care whether it was a food parcel for POWs or what was in there. Mm-hmm. Shoot the train up. And sometimes you'd get no food. You'd get soup somehow, watered soup. Vegetable.
You said they were starving too, so.
Oh, sure. Yeah, they were.
The Germans.
Yeah.
What was it that allowed you to get through this ordeal? You mentioned you had a Bible. How did that affect you?
Well, I didn't have it there. They took it off me.
Oh, did they?
Initial.
So your good luck charm was gone.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But was there any amount of. I guess I'm trying to get at faith. I'm not sure how. I was interviewing another veteran, and he said that was primary in him getting through the experience. What's his faith that he was being protected?
Faith?
Mm-hmm.
No, not in our camp.
No, it was all more just.
You were too. You had. You weren't going to by praying. You weren't going to get more food. Germans. Or anything else. If you get some more for tricks or not, you might be pulling on them for whatever reason, just for the hell of it. Thank you for counting. The German, they didn't know how to count too well. Well, you know, there's 10,000 people there to come twice a day, you know. So it wasn't too hard to screw it up, which we purposely did just for the hell of it. We got to have some humor somewhere.
What other kind of humor did you have?
We eventually, you might got a, for cigarettes and tobacco of sorts, and some foods like chocolate, you could get things away from some of the Germans. For this thing, you say, well, I'm not going to do it and give you the piece of a radio for that. So you'd have to work at what you gave them to equivalent in their mind as to what they were going to give you. Mm. And there was lots of them. Wanting chocolate and cigarettes. You know? So we had that sort of plus side.
Were you able to get things for entertainment, such as musical instruments? Or?
Well, we put on our own plays, that sort of thing. Whoever you might look like, you could do this. And you were asked, and, yeah, sure, I'll do that. So there was always plays by the POWs.
Were you involved in any?
No, I didn't bother that stuff.
Did you go see them?
Eh?
Did you go watch them?
Oh, sure. Yeah, they were worth watching.
You played bridge.
Played bridge all the time. Yeah. Didn't know how to play properly, but we learned how to play the game. How to bid was another thing. Nobody knew how to bid the system, which is half the game. Lots of card game. Poker at times, too.
What about escape attempts?
Well, there weren't many.
No?
Well, it was impossible, really. And like the ones that Luft 3 there, where they shot 50, everything. That was just a mad German group because they were going to be picked up after the war. I'm sure they were, too. We'd never heard anything about it. But
Was there lots of talk of it in the camp? Just something to keep you busy?
But
the talk of escape? Or?
No. You pretty well realized that it was just impossible.
A matter of waiting until...
Well, there was always somebody doing something just to keep the Germans on edge a bit. But as far as any sort of positive attitude of getting away from the camp, forget it.
Well, didn't you only have one or two slats left on your bed?
Yes, wooden slacks, or something. And then whatever was in the canvas thing, sawdust, I guess.
They used them for attempted tunnels or something.
Oh, yeah, to build tunnels. And that was a long process anyway, and very unlikely to not be discovered. Yeah. But what do you do with the dirt?
What about the aspect of fear in the camp? Were you ever afraid for your life inside the camp, or once inside, were you pretty much secure?
No. I often wondered how it was going to end, but you never had sort of an attitude of being afraid that you weren't going to win. As the POWs came in, the new ones, you got the latest word. Plus the fact we had the radio every day. Got the news from London. So BBC News. We knew what was going on more so than the Germans.
So you were, you felt safe inside the camp. Would you say you felt more safe inside the camp than when you were flying your missions?
Oh, sure.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, nobody shooting at you in the camp. Mm-hmm. Very seldom, anyway. Although there were those 50 ones were shot because they pulled off this particular escape. But no, we never had any fear we weren't going to win.
Well, that's pretty much. I'm pretty close to being done. I can see you looking at your watch.
Yeah.
Just a couple of closing questions. When you got out, how did you acclimatize yourself back to life after the camp?
Well, first of all, when we got back from We were just north of Hanover, in fact, when we got, because they kept coming in from the side, so prisoners of war were all coming into the middle, too. So when we got towards the end, the army trucks were commandeered by, I guess, by the camp people, because they knew, and they were told to rescue their POWs. So out you'd go to some port there in France and Holland, and you'd go I went back home on an airplane, but there weren't enough airplanes to take all the prisoners of war. So, but a lot of them went home just on the camp, on the ships or whatever. Then when you got back to England, you were skin and bone. You couldn't go anywhere. You thought you could go and leave, but they wouldn't let you. 5 meals a day if you wanted them. Eh? Don't overeat. Just take what you think was reasonable, and then you'd come along. You come back again in a couple of hours. You have some more. It was a mess. Must have been a mess for the people preparing the meals. But
tell them what the first song was that you heard when you got home, got back to England.
Who was that?
Don't Fence Me In.
Oh yeah.
That's
true. That's right. Yeah, don't fence me in. We had that song back in the thing too, I think. We had, being able to get things of importance from the Germans, there was always a number of them that would trade for cigarettes and chocolate bar. Even if it was in pieces, you know. We had enough guys in there who knew how to put all this stuff together and work. There were all kinds of intelligence in the air crew, all kinds of trades and that sort of thing, you know. So, yeah. It was an odd sort of life.
Do you keep in contact much with the people who were in the camp with you? Do you still talk to any of them? A letter?
Initially, when you first got back, but then it all faded away because you went your own thing. I went to university after. I went to UBC and took Bachelor of Commerce. And then I didn't know what I had, really. So I took Bachelor of Science Agriculture and that sort of thing. And so you just have to play away. Everybody didn't do that, but some people did.
Well, and you're still friends with one couple that the fellow was in the service with you that he had gone to school with.
Mm-hmm. Who's that?
Lloyd Kidd.
Oh, Lloyd Kidd.
Yeah.
He was, there were four people in my particular school, in Yutana Collegiate in Saskatoon. It was a prisoner of war camp. And there were two more for another year or so down the younger fellows. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Mr.
Well,
this is just
I'm not proud of what I just finished with saying. I didn't do it properly like I used to, but
This was more than enough.
Well, it's all in that pistol of mine anyway.
Thanks, Austin. Thank you to Doreen.
And there's another